Hi, this is Meredith Foster. This is the Epic Podcast. Enjoy.
All of them are wondering, Robert, what has happened to you? I tell them God is real. God is there. From that day, I've never been quiet. That was the total turnaround for my life.
Everybody has a story, and every one is a chapter, a piece of a much bigger picture. Welcome to Epic.
A great big story
that's been happening since the beginning.
It's filled with redemption,
suffering,
hope.
And power.
It has many characters.
And so you and I
are a part of it.
We're not the hero.
This is Epic.
Robert Nabulary grew up in rural Uganda. He was certain that education was his ticket out of poverty and into a fulfilling life. In fact, he put all his hope in it. But when he made it to college, he realized an education wasn't enough. There had to be a greater purpose in life, and he set out to find it. This is Chapter 21 of Epic, Robert Nabulary's story.
I'm born and raised in rural, poor Uganda. I grew up in a polygamous family. My dad had three wives, all at the same time. My mother was the first wife. She had two of us, an older sister of mine, then myself. Then the second wife had seven children with my dad. And the third wife had one son with my dad, but came into the marriage with five other children from three different marriages.
Is this typical? Is that typical of your community? That is a typical African
family.
And did you all live in under the same roof?
Or? Yes. Wow. At one time, we lived in the same roof.
Wow.
My dad had a semi-permanent house, mud around, but with bedrooms. So he had each bedroom for his wife. Then the children, we shared two living rooms. That's where we slept.
So this was typical in your community. What was it like growing up in that?
I mean, it's typical, but you feel it. It's crazy. Definitely. Both sides. I called all of them my moms. I wouldn't call them step or whatever. I called them mom. And my dad worked hard to try and keep his family going and even took responsibility of other people's children, and he raised them up. My dad had, this is something I rarely talk about, he had a physical deformity. He had a hunchback, and his chest like protruded out. So that gave him some bit of breathing difficulty and complication. But man, that man is a hero. He died when I was 17. But he worked hard, even with that physical deformity.
Wow.
We worked the garden, we dug our own food, and to keep the family going, he rode a bicycle, he taught me how to ride a bicycle. We carried charcoal from the deep in the village and ride it to the roadside. This is in Uganda, eastern part of Uganda. So I saw him working hard and in order to put me in school. I grew up in poverty. I put on my first pair of shoes when I was 14 and a half.
You never had shoes till you were 14?
No, I had no shoes. I walked barefooted to school for 3.5 miles on gravel road and then to and fro. My dad treasured education and always wanted us to go to school.
So what was your schooling like? When did you start going to school and how long did that last for
you? I started going to school, I believe, when I was 5.5. It was walking so hard to and fro. Sometimes I would cry, and then my sister picks me up, and, you know, we go to school. But I stayed in school at about, that's 1986, I believe that time I was, I turned 14. That's when I left my village to go to a boarding boys' school.
At 14?
At 14, yeah.
And how did, is that when you got the shoes?
Exactly.
How did that happen?
The first time, I actually had just, like, we call them in British English, slippers.
Slippers?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I thought that was okay to go with, because to me that was even big for me. They're open, like, you know.
Yeah.
So when I went to school, I realized I was the only one with that. Everyone else had four more closed shoes, but I stayed in school for that whole school term. It's after one whole school term that I came back home, and then my dad bought me
Real shoes
to be able to go back to school.
How did it feel to be the only kid with slippers?
I kind of valued the opportunity to be in school. It looked strange. Sometimes they would snap and have to go and mend them, but I was happy to be in school. Mm-hmm. Kind of you feel you're kind of odd person out, but I'm that kind of person. I'm a very positive person. I always keep on a smile and don't want to talk about. Later, I knew how to cope, especially when my dad passed away after I was in school, high school for 3 years. It was a big challenge for me to stay in school.
Were you able to stay in school?
Yes, I did. I would say those are some of the miracles that God performed for me even before I was a believer. I was not the firstborn, but kind of in Africa, the responsibility falls on the male, the first male child.
Mm-hmm.
So I took on the burden of being participating. I always thought my dad maybe didn't like me because he sent me out to do the hard jobs. But when he passed away, I realized he loved me so much that he was training me to be a leader. At the age of 17, I became a leader of my family and tried to keep it going.
As you were growing up, did you have any connection with God, or was God any part of your life?
I would say my dad was a Catholic and raised me up to go to the Catholic Church, kind of pray, but through the Holy Mary,
mm-hmm.
and kind of devoted. But my disconnect was, even though we did that, it confused me that the family in some way or the other was still involved with witchcraft.
Oh.
So I couldn't put the two together. That created a disconnect within me.
How was witchcraft a part of your family life?
No, because we were part of a bigger family.
If there
was something wrong in the family, they think one of the distant relatives is not conceiving or they have trouble in the marriage. So they would call the whole family at my uncle's place and then perform rituals and appease the spirits, you know. Yeah, that was it. So to me, it created a disconnect.
Yeah.
Though we were going to church, I couldn't put together the two. How are we still again connected with the witchcraft, then still going to the Catholic Church?
Right.
So then when my dad passed away, I worked so hard. I did all kinds of jobs.
What kinds of things did you do? What was available to a 17-year-old in rural Uganda?
I burnt charcoal and then ride it on a bicycle to sell on the roadside.
Oh, my goodness.
I made bricks out of mud, then sell them. Then I grew tomatoes. I grew cabbages. I would do that to stay in school.
Were you trying to make enough to take care of schooling and take care of your family as well?
Do my best to take care of the family and then take care of schooling.
Wow.
But an organization came my way that offered to help me, give me half of my school fees.
Wow.
It was called Christian Children's Fund. Now they are called Child Fund. That was a big break for me. So I would struggle, raise the rest, then they do that. It is a huge miracle that I was able to sit, do one more year, sit the O-levels and pass national examinations, then got the last 2 years, the A-levels, and I passed to go to the university. To me, it was a big thing coming out of my village, going to the university. 1992, Makerere University, Kampala, Uganda, was the only university in the country. And it was admitting only 2,000 students out of a possible 20,000 that were sitting the national exams. So I kind of walked with the shoulder high, big, excited. Finally, I've made it to the only university. I'd put all my hope in education. When I got to the university, I was blown away because that was my great expectation. But I found there a lot of immorality, sexual immorality. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of drinking. There was a lot of partying. There was a lot of profanities, vulgar language. And I feared what I saw, like my hope were dashed. I didn't expect to find that at the university. So when I saw those people, that time HIV/AIDS was killing people in Uganda. The prevalence rate was 34%.
34% of the population
exactly
was infected with HIV?
Exactly. People were dying. I feared. I thought if I lived like any of those people, I was going to die. I didn't want to die. I wanted to keep my father's family going. That's what led me on a search. There should be something bigger than education. There should be something more important in life to give me a purpose. There should be something I can hold on my life and find an identity and a purpose. So I attended every meeting I had of. I attended conferences. I attended debates. I attended discussions to try and find meaning and purpose. That's how I wandered into a meeting which they had advertised, come here, Rusty. I didn't make of that. Apparently, I discovered later, Rusty was a preacher who had been brought in by Campus Crusade.
So tell me about walking into the meeting. What was your experience?
I sat up in the balcony and listened, because I went there not knowing they are Christians. So then they began to talk. I realized they're talking about Christ. I did not make a decision. They said, if you have any questions, why don't you give us your details, your room number? We'll be happy to answer your questions. I said, no way. There is no way they are going to find me among thousands of students. So I gave my number to just disprove them. I said, they are lying.
You knew they weren't going to come, right?
No. But after some 1 week or so, someone came knocking on the door saying, is Robert in here? So he came in. He said, oh, you gave us your details. You attended a meeting. I'm here to answer your questions. When my roommates discovered he's preaching Christ, they kind of giggled and went out. The man kept coming. I told him, come back Thursday at 5. Come back Wednesday at 6. Come back Saturday at 8. Every time I told him, he was on the door knocking. So one day I said, let me accept what he's saying. Maybe I'll stop this man from coming.
He was not giving up.
No. So that's how he led me to Christ. He gave me a little Gideon's Bible, the New Testament. I put it in my pocket.
Had you ever had a Bible before?
Not at all. Never had a Bible. So he introduced me to a Christian fellowship, but I did not tell my roommates I had accepted Christ.
Why not?
I was fearful. I stayed that way, going for fellowship for about 2 months, and then coming back but telling nobody. That led me to another journey of searching. I said, God, if this is real, how come I'm not bold about it? How come I've not told anyone about it? I said, God, there has to be more. So that led me to a second. I was bored of that kind of life. Why am I not expressing it? Why am I not telling anyone?
Do I not really believe this?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So then there was another preacher who came to the university. They said a great man of God was coming for a one-day conference. I said, I've given God one last chance. I'm going to that meeting not to see the great man of God. I want an encounter with the God of that man.
Robert had put all his hope in education to save him, and it had failed. Now he was giving God one last chance to prove he was real. What happened next changed Robert's life forever. Part 2 is coming up on Epic. Welcome back to Epic. Today, Robert Nabulary is sharing his incredible story of growing up in poverty in Uganda. He had hoped education would save him, but when that failed, he found himself searching for life's purpose. People had told him about Jesus, but was he real? Here's part 2.
I said, I've given God one last chance. I'm going to that meeting not to see the great man of God. I want an encounter with the God of that man. That's where God touched me in that meeting.
What happened?
He preached. They sang. I don't remember what they sang. I don't remember what he preached. I wanted to touch God. I wanted to be transformed. So he says in the meeting, at the end of the preaching, if any of you wants to be touched by the power of God, come in the aisle here. I wanted to be number one in the line. 2 people beat me to the line. I wasn't ready to go behind. So I kind of stuck my shoulder right behind that second person. The man begins to pray. He says, you're going to be touched by the Holy Spirit. I didn't know any of that stuff. I was just a new believer. Literally, with my hands raised up, I felt something like fire burn on my right hand. And I'm like, God, is that what he's saying? I looked around, looked behind and in front. Is anybody feeling what I'm feeling? So kind of confused. Then he prays, God, touch these young people by your power. I was literally carried off my feet. And I fell 6 feet behind me. And I said, no. It couldn't be that somebody pushed me, because I was standing only with my shoulder in. So while I'm on the floor, I hear a voice through the loudspeaker. He's saying, pick up that young man. And I don't know which young man they are talking about. I'm confused on the ground. I feel 2 firm hands holding me, and they pick me up, take me to the front. I stand before this preacher. He looks at me head to toe. And I see my nakedness. For the first time, I feel as though someone is looking through my entire life. I feel how wretched I am. And I say, I need more of you, God. I just feel that. Then he prays, Father God, use this young man. The same experience happens again to me. I feel a power carry me off my feet. I fall down to the ground. I was weeping. I was crying. I'd encountered the reality of God. He was so real to me on the ground there that I wasn't aware of my surrounding. By the time I got away from the floor, I was in tears. The preacher was gone. The choir was gone. Sound equipment out of the room. The room is almost empty.
So you were out for a while.
Yes, wow. Absolutely. But man, I was fired up. My heart was totally transformed. I wanted to tell everyone and everything, God is real. God is there. He has touched me. He's real. I wanted to tell the desks, the furniture there, God is real. I wanted to talk to the walls. I wanted to talk even to the trees. I literally would feel myself so light. I walked the fastest walk across the university back to my hall, into my room. I banged the door open, picked up my roommates, holding them by their hands and shoulders. I said, you people, God is there. God is real. They are like, they had never heard me say anything. They didn't know I'd become a believer. All of them are wondering, Robert, what has happened to you? I tell them, God is real. From that day, I've never been quiet. That was the total turnaround for my life. Now, what happened is, when I entered the university, my dream was, study very hard, get a good job, make lots of money, deliver your family out of poverty. No problem with that. But the problem was, the education wasn't now the identity that I had. I was going to stay in school, but my life was so radically transformed for Christ that that dream died. I wanted to live my life telling everyone of the goodness of God. There is a God who loves you, no matter where you come from, no matter how mixed up your background is. There is a greater purpose for you. You can find your identity not in your past, but in your relationship with your Creator, your Maker, the one who gave up his Son, Jesus, to die for you. There was a revival that broke out in Makerere University those years.
A revival?
Yes.
Right after your experience?
In that time, they began to pray and fast and then invited us, let's pray for the university. The sexual immorality came down. Girls and boys came into the chapel crying, repenting of their sins. The drinking went down. We saw the power of God on the university. Now, they invited me right into the middle of this. I don't know, maybe because I was loud, I never kept quiet. If there was a meeting and asked anybody to give a test, I didn't know many scriptures, but I would stand up and say my testimony.
Yeah.
So they kind of invited me into the leadership. I said, wow, do you people realize I'm just only a new believer? They said, it's okay. I mean, they just trusted me to be part and participate. Now we began to pray and saw that transformation of the university. When we had school break, we weren't going back home to our family, to our parents. We literally began to organize mission trips into every part of the country. Go preach Christ. We raised our own money. We accommodated ourselves. We slept in ramshackled places, unfinished buildings. We cooked our own food on firewood. We preached the gospel everywhere as young boys and girls at the university.
College students?
College students.
Wow.
Makerere University.
Wow.
The years 93, 94, 95. This is known by, we are all over the world, and many of them may be listening to this. Their lives wouldn't be the same if they weren't touched by God in that season. Totally transformed by the presence of God. So that was what formed now the new me. And I knew I wasn't going to be comfortable in a corporate setting. I did mathematics, economics, and statistics at the university. I wasn't going to sit in an office behind a computer and talk about the numbers, the statistics.
Well, that was not going
to
work
not
for you.
Not the figures for me. I wanted to meet the people, the faces, and talk to them about the love of God. So I went and joined a church. I began to serve my pastor, Robert Kayanja. I began to preach, be there available, go anywhere, do anything. And this was doing it for free, not with a pay.
Hmm.
We were just serving God and know God will reward us. Now, by that time, I got married. I met my wife at the university. I told her, I'm going to live my life as a preacher. I'm going to serve God. The Robert Navarrete you're seeing now, I'm not going to change. I'm going to be on fire for God. I'm going to go places. I don't know what we are going to eat. I don't know how I'm going to live. I don't know what we are going to dress, but I'm kind of interested in you. Would you be my life partner?
And what was her response?
She said yes. She said yes.
She was the right partner for you.
We got married, but she gave me a condition. You preach. Do anything you can. Preach Christ. Evangelize. Support a church. Stand with another pastor. Never ever start a church on your own. The day you ever start a church, I will walk out on you. Because she knows, and she knew then, that starting a church in Uganda by your own was tough, was hard. Yeah. It's a big price. But fast forward, after serving for 10 years with my pastor, the church grew to a big church, 10,000-seater glass cathedral with so many people. We were young people out of the university. We were part of a big dream, very successful. My wife was doing a good job. She was earning some good money. We were living in a decent house, 3-bedroom, with a young family, kind of grown up in the ministry. You have a spot, you have where you park, where you have where you sit, you have people who are willing to serve you.
Very comfortable.
Very. But things had begun to fall apart. Within 3 years, like everything we were holding on was simply falling apart. I knew there's something terribly wrong. On the outside, things looked great. On the inside, there was turmoil. I went and talked to my pastor. I told him, I don't know what I'm going through. I don't understand this. It's very painful. Will you let me go? But I don't know where I'm going. He said, Robert, God showed me that you are going to plant a church. I looked straight into his face. I said, no, not me. How did God speak to you? Was it a vision? Was it a dream? Was it a prophecy?
Yeah.
I did not want it. I did not like it. I loved the ministry. I never wanted to start a church. He looked at me and laughed. He said, Robert, I'm your pastor. He gave me some money in dollars. He said, go take care of your wife and your children. This is home. You can always come back and we talk. I gave my wife some money. I told her, take care of the kids. I'm going to fast and pray. I took a bus, farthest part of our country, northern Uganda, Gulu town. I rented a hotel room. I was going to fast and pray. I wanted to fast without eating any food for 3 days. When I entered my hotel room, before I put on my backpack, the Spirit of God began to speak to me. He said, you are running away from me. Go back and listen to your pastor. I've called you to start a church. I broke down in tears and began to cry. I didn't fast. I ate for 3 days. And went back and talked to my pastor. And we took a step of faith. We agreed on the dates. He said, let's go for it. God had led us to a poorer neighborhood. Nothing like where we were serving. But that's where God had spoken. That's where we're going. We took a loan against my wife's job. Against her salary. Let's go into this community.
You took a loan against your wife's salary.
Exactly.
In order to fund this church plant.
Exactly. Now, remember, I wasn't earning a salary. We were living off my wife's salary. Now we had taken a loan in order to fund a church plant. But God was in it. We knew we wanted to obey God. My pastor came, preached for me. We went into this community. We had a crusade. He preached for me. He called us up front and blessed us. After 1 week of preaching the crusade, we told the people a church is starting next Sunday. That's how we started. And since then, the church has been going on. And God has been gracious. Miracles have been happening. God provided miraculously. We later started a school in that poor area. We have seen the school grow from 16 students on the first day to 450 right now.
Oh my goodness.
Miracle Destiny High School. I'm passionate about the church because I knew God called me to do it. We have planted other churches that are planting other churches.
Your church has already planted other churches?
Exactly. And those churches are planting other churches. And then the school, I'm passionate about education because look at me, poor boy from a poor village deep in eastern Uganda, living in poverty, put on first pair of shoes when I was 14 and a half. But the education that my dad exposed me to helped me break away. So I'm passionate about education. Give these children an education. They live in poor slums. But not just an education, because that was my first dream. But I realized it was just an empty hope if it was just an education. We said we will give these children an education which is Christ-centered. That's why we are pursuing that education. And we are raising up disciples who are going to disciple others. So I feel that that's my life's mission now, to make Christ known. These are serving avenues, whether through the church, whether through the schools, whether through the free community medical outreaches we are doing in Uganda. I want to know him more and make him known because Jesus is the hope of of the whole world.
One thing that becomes apparent as you listen to Robert speak is that he knows the poverty that was part of his identity as a child, but he also knows his identity now as a son of the living God. And that confidence compels him to dream. It has launched the Miracle Center Church, the Miracle Destiny School. Now he is dreaming of Miracle Destiny University so that the children they serve will have a way out of poverty and they'll know their identity in Jesus. You can learn more about Robert's story at gatewaytohope.com or on our website at myfaithradio.com. We believe everybody has a chapter in God's great big story, and we'd love to hear about yours on our website. That's also where you can find podcasts of other chapters of Epic and read articles about our guests. While you're there, download the Faith Radio app so you can listen to Epic anytime you want. Big thanks to the folks who helped make Epic possible, Ted Ross and Jason Rackow. Thanks to Stefan Johnson for our theme music. I'm your host, Meredith Foster. Hope you'll join us next week. Thanks so much for listening. Every episode of Epic is made possible by people like you. You can make a gift today at myfaithradio.com. And if you love the show, let others know about it by sharing this audio link. You can make sure you never miss an episode when you subscribe to the podcast at iTunes or your favorite podcast player.